Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live. Today is Friday, January the 13th. It's Friday the 13th, 2017. Just want to once again thank you all for listening to Tando Radio Show. Have a live show for you today. And before we get into the show, we are waiting on my man, Brother Braggs. Brother Braggs, when you get in, just hit star. That will unmute you. And then we'll get going in the show. But before we do that, everyone, continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. You can do that by going to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you'll see on the website in the far right-hand margin, you'll see a green donation prompt that's there with the two holding hands. You can hit that, and that will lead you into how you can give some of your financial energy to this network so that it can continue to bring you what it's been bringing you and what you consider very, very valuable. So let's continue to support Black Talk Radio Network and give some of your financial energy so that it will be here for the future and continue to do what it's been doing. Also, if you'd like to engage in the social media operations that Black Talk Radio Network has put together, very easily done on the website, the same website that you can for the donation, you'll see on the far right margin, far right hand margin, if you go down the page, you'll see the BTR community, the BTR community, and you can see a B that's there, and or you can find it by going to www.btrcommunity.com, and you can engage in the social media outlets. Excuse me, you can engage in some of your social media activities by going there, and you can post things about your business, about you, some things that you find interesting. All of your social media activities can be done right there at BTR Community, and it's only $24 a year, and the benefit to that is that you don't have to worry about your identity being sold, or you don't have to worry about you being actually adversely affected, because whatever it is that you comment on, what you're posting on, and it will not harm you in any way, because it's not for any and everyone. It's just for those that engage in BTR community. Some of you, all of your social media activities there at BTR is only $24 a year at BTR community. So well worth it. And you can have you can actually post activities. You can do your social media activities without having to worry about being adversely affected by it. Also, if you like to acquire real money, if you like to save as a queen or save as a king, you can do that with gold, or save as a lady and a gentleman. You can do that with silver by going to Prosperity Mint. And that's ProsperityMint.com. And you can check out what's in inventory, and then you can contact Prosperity Mint by going to wolf6pack1@gmail.com, wolf6pack1@gmail.com. And before you engage in any purchase, make sure you email wolf6pack1@gmail.com. All right, with that being said, let's jump into what's in the news. First article from what's in the news, it was from yesterday, has everything to do with, this one came from Israel breaking. Last night, the government of Israel had attacked the Assad or the Syrian. Munition depot and as well as attacking the Air Force itself, an Air Force base in Syria close to Damascus, was actually bombed and with Israeli Air Force. So this whole paradigm, and remember we posted here on Tando Radio Show about maybe 2 weeks ago, maybe not even that, what Netanyahu had said to, and it was in on Russian, it was on a Russian, you had to translate it, right click at the Russian, what Netanyahu said that they're ready to invade Syria. So ladies and gentlemen, this stuff is really starting to pick up. So check out that one that's there. I've been kind of busy today, so I haven't been able to do any follow-up on that. So that was posted there, and this is nothing new, and this is only going to continue to happen, and this is why you really need to get prepared for what they have in store for all of us. Okay, so next article. Next article came from, okay, there's another article from Global Times. And there was one from Daily Mail. Let's use the one from Daily Mail first. From Daily Mail, dailymail.uk.co. And the Daily Mail had an article where from yesterday, Senate confirmation hearing for the new Secretary of State, Tillerson, he said that they wanted to actually start to have a blockade of China for its overall role in the South Sea of China with the militarizing the some of the islands and trying to prevent free navigation, freedom navigation of the United States military, and as well as to control that whole South Sea of China. He suggested that they need to have a more harsher tone with China and even to blockade China from having to be able to control the South Sea of China. Well, within that article, also China's response to that was that then the United States should prepare for war. And also there was the Global Times article that's a Chinese publication out of China itself, and they also said that if the United States was to take this posturing with the South Sea of China and the One China policy, then they need to prepare for war because China is not going to back down. So check out that article. Very, very telling. Also, there's a very, I posted something from YouTube, and you should all check this out. This was for the Senate confirmation hearing for Mattis, who was going to be the new Secretary of Defense. And Mattis took a very hard line against Russia and against China. But this was the key to that whole, I think it was like 1 minute and 10 seconds into that short video, you could hear McCain make a mistake. Major, major mistake. Here's what was the major mistake. McCain actually was going to say, is Russia threatening the new world order? He said, is Russia threatening the new world? And then he said, the new order. And so check out that. It tells you everything. So check out that YouTube video that we posted there. And as well as, I don't know if I posted this one, but yesterday, while Maxine Waters was in the House of Representatives giving a responding to or commenting on a bill, the C-SPAN network was hacked by RT, and she was taken offline, and then commercials came in, and they were commercials from RT, and then RT took over C-SPAN for like a couple of minutes yesterday, and they were actually broadcasting on C-SPAN. Now, why is this so important? The hacking that's going on is severe. It's some severe hacking that's going on, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to lead to war. And that's what they're going to use as an excuse to do that. So you definitely need to be prepared for what's going on. I wouldn't be surprised if sometime between now and Tuesday something major happens, or even something on the lines that the celebrity figurehead, president-elect, does not ever take over the office of the CEO, celebrity figurehead CEO of the Corporation of the United States, as being the CEO and president of the United States. Things are really, really rampaging, and you should be preparing yourself and your family for the unknown. And if you've been listening to Tando Radio Show, I don't think it's unknown at all. So check that out. All right, so with that being said, my man, Brother Braggs, is going to be coming on. And, man, Brother Braggs has got a bunch of great stuff for you. Scotty, is Brother Braggs there?
Please.
Brother Braggs, what's going on? Okay, good. Your audio was really good. Brother Braggs, just make sure you talk into it so everybody can hear, because the information that you have is so important. So what we want to do is that I wanted to give Brother Braggs an opportunity for him to just to present some of his research and some of his findings. And I know Brother Braggs shares so much with me, with Roz, and it's just priceless. And so today we were talking, and I don't want to blow it, but some of the things that Brother Braggs is going to be talking about, and we're going to be talking about today, some historical truths from the Caliphians, from Queen Khalifa, to other things that go along with that. And it was so funny, some of the things that Brother Braggs wants to bring up, I was actually researching myself yesterday, and then he brought it up, and I was like, wow, love it. So you all know who Brother Braggs is. You all know how much information he brings to us all. So without further ado, we're going to go to Brother Braggs. Brother Braggs, I'm going to be here. We won't have to do a commercial break until the top of the hour, so Brother Braggs, it's all yours. Let's do it, and let's talk about it. Let's educate, and let's give our people some information that they can do some of their own research on and be aware of some of the lies and some of the real truths that we should be resonating in right now.
Alrighty then. You know what? I'm going to start off by what they call it. Now, this article came from Slate.com, America's Other Original Sin. And what it tells about, it tells about how they initially enslaved the Indians, the little girls and the women. You got to remember that these Europeans came out of Europe, all their women were diseased and whatnot. So they needed these women. It wasn't just they were raping, but they had a reason. They were diseased, and they brought their disease with them over here, and it devastated the indigenous. Okay. I just want to hit my notes like that. And look, the way that I think I'm moving in and out my notes, because I do a lot of notes, okay? The first slaves white European colonists had North American colonists were Indians. The Spanish and the Portuguese rivals began enslaving natives, Europeans, and Caribbean and North America. Continued this practice, wars against the Native American Indians. Beacon's Rebellion, King Philip's War, and the Yamasee War produced captives who became free laborers for the ends of their lives. And the colonial coast of North America soon swelled with the trade of native bodies, all while Africans were just starting to arrive here. Now, this guy, Special Agent J. Ross, Indian Affairs, his motto was must exterminate Indians. California War, one of the last areas of the New World to be colonialized. It wasn't until 1769 that the first mission San Diego de Alcata, in California, the first of 21 missions would become the primary means for Spaniards to subjugate the indigenous. To the leader of this effort was Junipero Serra. The missions were numerous. Vigilante-type paramilitary troops were established, whose principal occupation seems to have been to kill the black Indians, kidnap their children. groups such as the Humboldt Home Guards, the Elk River Minutemen, and the Place Blades, among others, terrorized local natives. The local authorities not only ignored the genocide in their midst, they encouraged it. Rewards ranged from $5 for every severed head in Sausage City in 1855 to 25 cents for a scalp in Honey Lake in 1863. The California Gold Rush would strike a fatal blow and impending destruction of California's first civilization, Utila, Atlan, land of the black.
Hey, Brother Bragg, real quick, on that, because what you just read was very critical. I just wanted you to put some historical from when you've been doing your research, when you read that, combined with other things that you read, paint us a picture as to what was going on at that time and why do you think it was happening? Because I know that the Pope gave the edicts, and if you could talk about some of the edicts that the Pope had gave during that time frame, and what were they really after, in your opinion?
Okay, you got to remember, our history started thousands of years before Columbus, okay? All right, 1787, the U.S. government enacted Northwest Ordinance, was granted the first organized territory out of the region territory of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Battle of Fallen Timbers, 1794, Battle of Fallen Timbers, led by General Anthony Wayne. 1802, President Thomas Jefferson signed the Georgia Compact. 1830, government praised Indian Removal Act. At the beginning of the Crusades, Pope Urban II issued an edict, the Papal Bull, Terra Nuclis, meaning empty land. It gave the kings and princes of Europe the right to discover or claim land in North non-Christian lands. The policy was extended in 1492 when Pope Nicholas V issued the Bull Romanus Pontificus, declaring war against all non-Christians throughout the world and authorizing the conquest of their nations and territories. These edicts treated non-Christians as uncivilized and subhuman and therefore without rights to any land or nation. Christians claimed a God-given right to take control of all land and use the ideal to justify war, colonialization, and even slavery. 1493, Pope Alexander I issued the Bull Inter Cartera, granted Spain the right to conquer lands that Columbus had already discovered and all he might come across in the future. In 1823, the Doctrine of Discovery was written into the U.S. law as a way to deny the right to Native Americans. The Indian Wars genocide from 1845. A Democrat and prominent editor, John O'Sullivan, gave the Doctrine of Discovery a uniquely American flavor when he coined the term manifest destiny to defend the United States' expansionism and claims of new territory. Then also, you got Crystal Lake, California. You're going to find that they got mummies there. Now, when I start talking about these mummies, I don't want to confuse you all. I'm still talking about the same subject. All through America, they got mummies. They got temples. They got me. But these things, most people don't know about for whatever reason. If I wasn't such a dogged, I got a book right here called A Lost Continental View by James Churchwall. In this book, some of the things are really fascinating. He went to India and he got with some of the yogis and they taught him how to decipher some ancient writings. So then he tells about Pangaea. But I'm in the Pangaea from another way. They say it broke into seven pieces. I feel that the brothers that I follow, they say it broke into 13 pieces. Now, when you listen to what I'm saying, Mu and Lemuria were part of these pieces. So now we're talking about a land bridge that you can follow with little canoes that go from North America to South America, and you can go right on through the islands, the Melanesian Islands. From these steps, these islands. But these islands no longer exist. Atlantis, Lemuria, Mu, three of the major ancient civilizations. Now, those civilizations are probably, this is a civilization that's a spinoff from them. So this is that's why I say, this may be an older continent here in America than the first pyramids, they're older here than in Egypt. And I'm no expert, but if you start doing your homework, you're going to start finding out things that I'm finding out there. we got the greatest story never told, without a doubt. Now, back to some other things.
Hey, Brother Rags.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because this is it's so important. So now, in your opinion, give us paint a picture for us as to why you think, what was the big conquest? What was the significance of the ancient times with the relationships? Because as you said, they broke off into 13, and then the land bridges. With those land bridges, what type of society could you have when you had those land bridges? What type of relations could you have in different parts of the world?
Remember, that made these people, they were seafarers. They went all around the world. They knew how to navigate this land. They always been on this land. And that's what makes it so. Remember, you got temples and pyramids that stretch from the Americas. We talk about all the way around the world, as far as Australia, India. They got them in Romania. They got them, they're all over the world. Everywhere that we were, these places, these temples, these power centers, I don't know what you want, call it what you like, these ancient structures that come from people that look like us. Remember, when you start seeing the Mongols, and that's another thing, I was looking at the Mongols in this Marco Polo thing. Every time they showed the Mongols, they try to make them look like the American Indian. It was blowing my mind, because they try to portray, well, they were portraying a horse culture, and you know, these were nomadic people that roamed all around. And the leader of these people, whatever he says is absolute, he's God on earth. That's another thing you gotta peep when you start dealing with these old world ways. When you get into feudalism with serfs and peasants and lords and free men and bondsmen and estates and all of this stuff, basically it comes from the church, really. When you really look at it, if you do a lot of study, you'll find the Median law, I can't pronounce it to save my life, but that kind of law from the Bible. So back to what Dave said, I wanted to go in on Queen Khalifa, though, because man, it's my favorite, one of my favorite things other than the Moors. We will get right to that too.
Yeah, because when you look at it, Brother Braggs and everyone, when you look at this, there's a picture that you can see that all of the technology, the advancements that were made, were far before the conquering spirit had really come about. And there was a reason why they had to have this, the conquering spirits, was because within their own, a lot of the conquerors were taken at face value as being benevolent, and they had no benevolent intention at all. They were there primarily to first, when they met these indigenous people, they didn't know what type of technology or who or what they had. And then when they looked at what they had, they were amazed. And this is where their greed starts to supersede everything else, and the only thing that they wanted to do was to conquer. Brother Bragg said back in their lands that they had settled, their ecosystem was collapsing, their economies were in disarray, their overall communities were in disarray. And then what saved them? Go ahead, Brother Bragg.
Totally diseased, as you paint that picture, Dave, and that's what you got to realize. They're coming out of their environment is decimated by disease. Every few years they lose millions of people to the disease. It's a way of life. Neighbors kill each other like it's a regular thing. This is how they treated one another. So they leave a country, a nation like that, and they come to a clean, free nation. Because see, remember when they walk over here, they as vandals after they came here, they destroyed all the great structures that were here, because they were great structures. From here, all through Americas, South America, all down into Mexico, people had cities that were lit up. See, these are the things they want to say. The other part of that Dave was mentioning earlier, when Columbus came here, Columbus was on a religious quest. He was searching for the land of milk and honey. He was coming to the promised land. So when he came here, when they came here, the people they found here, their practices were like the Jews, but they didn't look like the Jews. So guess what? If you kill off God's chosen people, how are you going to tell the world you went to the promised land or you went to the Garden of Eden and then you massacred the God's people in the Garden of Eden? So if you do your research, and that's another thing, Columbus was on a religious quest. Now they say Columbus was Italian. I got another book over here saying he was Greek. So his identity is questionable at most. But we know one thing. He started the land grab. He was the first one to really start the land grab, where they started grabbing all indigenous lands. Because when he got involved, remember, Ferdinand and Isabella, they married Portugal and Spain. They married that power. And then the church, which is the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, not the Byzantine, the Roman Catholic Church, started issuing these charters to take land from all people that were nappy-headed, people of color that looked like you, was specific people they went after. They didn't just go after anybody. They went after people. See, the Crusaders also, they saw such great wealth when Mansa Musa went through. He wrecked the economy for years to come because he showed them all that gold. This is why when Portuguese and Spain comes up out of there, they are just like frenzied, mad for gold. They come in, they kill everything in their sight to get gold. They enslave whole populations and decimate them for gold. The disease just from their bodies killed maybe 70-80% of the population just from the filth, from the disease. And this is like, it's not an accident. They knew it. And all of these, every time they decimated a substantial part of the indigenous population, the Oto times, every time they decimated them, they had a day of Thanksgiving. This is the kind of stuff that be gassing me. So if there were 10 massacres, they had 10 holy celebrations, Thanksgivings for the massacre of these people, that they died from disease or they died from being poisoned, because they poisoned the water, kidnapped children and they poisoned water, they kidnapped women and children and they poisoned water.
Brother Brad, you said something about the Auto Chitan. What that may be the first time that some of our listeners are hearing that. What is that, and what does that mean?
You native to the land, you ancient to the land. So you got native, you got citizen. A citizen belongs to the government. A native is a person that's not born to the land. We have Auto Chitan, you're born to the land. You're the ancient people from this land, you and I. You can call us what you like, copper color people, black people, but I'm telling you that black is all right. You know, I say it loud, I come from that. But black is a status. And if you check Black's Law Dictionary, pull up black, and then you'll see what I'm saying. Because it's nothing to argue about. The thing we got to do, we got to build. We can't get stuck on semantics or, you know, things like that. We can move past that kind of stuff. But it's very important that we all understand it. Because, see, me and my nephew had to argue about being black. Stop calling yourself black. Look, man, don't tell me what to call myself. It was good enough for my ancestors. Then when I really started, went and looked at the word, like he was right. I admit when I'm wrong. When I went and looked at it, we're not the black people. Actually, the white people are black people. They got everything upside down. If you look at the definition, get in the Edelman and pull the definition of black, then you'll be like, wow. I might have it written down here. I don't know.
I know you got it written down somewhere. I know you do.
Yeah. I got about 6 notebooks over here. And that's another thing. I got so many notebooks, man, because when I study, I know I'm not going to be able to remember everything. I'm not a computer guy, so I'm still doing things like they did in the dark ages.
So, Brother Bragg, and picking it back up where we had first left off, and you were saying that there was this religious conquest, but it wasn't just Columbus that was on the religious conquest, was it?
No, it was all of those Italian explorers, whatever you want to call them, adventurers, but they were rapists and murderers. That's what they are. Don't give them no hero names. They're not heroes. They came to people who were unarmed, and they came with superior weapons, and they killed men, women, and children, and they took their stuff. So don't give them no, they're not heroic. There's nothing heroic about that. All of that is cowardly. Deplorable. So don't get me wrong. Because see, that's why I don't have a lot of friends. Because when they start talking about history, you can't call these people heroes. There's nothing heroic about what they did. They came, they unleashed biological weapons on people who were used to a pristine environment.
Right, yeah.
Who never saw it coming because they got sucker punched. Then after you decimate so much of the population, that's why we subjugated, we don't know what's up. After you kill off the elders, you could teach the people anything you want. That's what propaganda is. So you get to mind white people and put back inside their psyches and their minds what all over the world. He who writes the narrative writes the script. That's educationally, even as you watch the TV, they guide our whole society a certain way by the narrative and all these programs you watch. When you see our children acting out in the street, they're on the program. They didn't sit here and watch how to act. They see your subconscious mind is taking in all this nonsense. And when you strike out because you got a trigger that you don't know you have because you sit here being programmed. So when you start acting all weird because you watch this weird stuff, and you start striking out, people don't know what's going on. On the weekend, all of a sudden, you got all these fights, all these murders, all these shootings. But it's a program. They've been playing this program so much, people have taken the program. They just go with it. It's Saturday and Friday, we're going to be violent. Because it's unthinking. Because see, if you're conscious of being conscious, you won't act out like that against somebody that looks just like you. That's the program. Destroy from within. And that's why the history, as we go through history, I wanted to get into this brother here, this brother Chiswell. This brother is so bad because what he does, he goes from European expansionism. He goes through time. He takes you right across time, which is how I love to see what happened. So he goes through time. He tells how they went from place to place. And this is what they always have done. They come wherever you are. The first thing they do, they want your labor. You always talk about the human asset, labor. So they want you to do something to make them rich. So they come with force. They make you work for free. That's like that initiative we're talking about where they can take
Hey,
you,
Brother Braggs, this is Scotty, man. Please keep your voice
yes,
up. Sometimes you're dipping so low, man, I know they're not able to hear you. So try to keep your voice up. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, what was I saying? Man, I forgot my place.
No, you're good. You were talking about that's part of the conquering spirit is
the coming about the expansionism. Right.
Yeah,
talking about the
Brother Braggs. Brother Braggs. Can you hear me, Brother Braggs? Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
If a person just go on Google right now and Google Mississippian Nation and go to the images and you will see maps, and it's a map of this indigenous nation that existed prior to the Spaniards were the first one to land here from Europe, and they landed on the coast of Carolina, and they pushed in about 200 or 300 miles into North Carolina when they got wiped out. It was that nation that
right.
they were part of the Mississippian nation. But you were talking about how they just pave over, you know, the cities and the places that already existed. If you Google that Mississippian map, it's Mississippian. And what's the name of this nation? It was basically a confederation of different tribes.
The North American Federation of Indian Tribes. The
yeah.
North American Federation
now,
of Indian Tribes.
Now, if you look at that map, tribes. It shows you some of the you know, cities and towns, villages, whatever you want to call them, trading posts that already existed and some of the routes. Now, then, take a modern-day map of the United States, particularly the South, from Florida on, you know, on up to Virginia, wherever. But you will see that all of those major cities are lying right on top of those indigenous cities that was already here.
That's right. Look, the Postal Service, the routes for the Postal Service are the indigenous people's routes. All they did, everything was in place. I'm telling you, when they came here, it was a great civilization here. I'm talking about structurally. Not no teepees. We talking about stone buildings that were lit. Man, we come from some great people. Our story is hidden. Just imagine. See, I don't know how old you guys are. Matter of fact, just between us, I turned 61 today. But that ain't no thing. Check this out. They used to show all these, like Livingston and Clark, the Lost Sea of Gold. This was back in the days when people weren't really paying attention. When I was a kid, when they were showing all these old movies. They used to go into places like in the Grand Canyon, which they don't do anymore, and show you all kind of where the Pueblo Indians live and all these, man, just places that they don't show anymore. So we got stuff. Matter of fact, if you go check out, a lot of these golf courses have been on top, built on top of Indian burial grounds. This stuff is so interesting because we're standing right on top of it, and they've been able to keep everything concealed because we're the only people in this country that can't come and go where we want. You got to be watched everywhere you go because you might stumble upon something you're not supposed to see.
Matter of fact, Brother Bragg, your volume is going out.
I don't know what I'm not moving around anything in one place. I don't know why it's moving out.
Yeah, keep it close to your mouth. So that's all. Keep it up, and then we'll be able to hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, but this stuff is all over. Giants. Man, that's all kind of 8 feet giants. But this is the same guys who are playing in the NBA right now. It's the copper-colored people of America. Man, it's not new. Brothers were 8 feet tall, 7 foot. But that used to be more common than it is now.
Yeah.
Where's my book, Chen Wu? I can't find a book. Forgive me. That's what you hear me rustling around back here. Oh, here it is right here. The West and the Rest of Us. Now, look, I'm just going to read a quick page of this guy. This dude's name is, his name is Chen Wu, Chinweizu, The West and the Rest of Us. Now, this book cost $100. It was gifted to me, and I thank him for it. One of the best books anybody ever gave. I just want to hit you with this one, with this, the assault by the West upon the rest of us. For nearly six centuries now, Western Europe and its despoja have been disrupting the peace of the world, enlightened through their renaissance by the learning of the ancient Mediterranean, armed with the gun, the making of whose power that they had learned from Chinese firecrackers, equipped with ships with Latin sails, astrolabes, and nautical compasses, all invented by Chinese and transmitted to them by Arabs, fortified in aggressive spirit by an arrogant, misogynistic Christianity of both the Popish and the Protestant varieties, and motivated by the lure of enriching plunder. White hordes have sailed forth from the Western Europe homelands to explore, assault, loot, occupy, rule, and exploit the rest of the world. And even now, the fury of their expansionism assault upon the rest of us has not abated. Portuguese and Spanish seafarers were the first wave of white pearl to descend upon the rest of the beginning with their sally in 1415 across the Strait of Gibraltar to capture Ceuta, a thriving terminal of the Trans-Sahara trade and West African gold. The Portuguese went south and east to spread their Christian faith, to seek contact with Prester John, believed by European legends to be king of Christian Ethiopia, to hunt for gold and search for spices. By the late 15th century, the Romans had brought them to the coast of West Africa. There they brought ivory, spices, and gold, and seized slaves. By the early 16th century, the Romans had brought them to Swahili coast of East Africa and to the shores of Arabia, Persia, and India. There they attacked and seized mastery over the Indian Ocean trade of the native Kiswahili, Persians, Arabs, and the Indians. They pushed on beyond the Melanesian Peninsula to Indonesian and the Philippine archipelagos of Southeast Asia to secure spices. From there, they went on to South China Sea and to Japan. Their attempts to impose themselves on China and Japan were quickly defeated by the Chinese Coast Guard fleets, incurred by Tokugawa, Shogun of Japan. I'm not saying that right. Tokugawa. Tokugawa. Yes, that is right. Their encroachments upon the rest of the world yielded them a 16th century empire from Lisbon and made profit by plantations in Brazil and Angola, by slaving in Africa, and by the spice trade in South Asia, Ambona, Axum, Bahia, Calcutta, Cochin, Myra, Fort Jesus, Goa, Homers, Jaffa, Luna, Maraca, Mombasa, Pernambuco, Rio de Janeiro, Sao Tomo, Sofala, and Tanay became the major port settlement and trading posts of this empire. Spurred on by the successes of the Portuguese neighbors, the Spaniards attempted to participate in the lucrative trade and were blocked by the Papal War of 1455, which had granted to Portugal a monopoly over the trade of lands she came upon to the east. In theory, the Spanish would restrained by the Papal Bull and practiced it were blocked by the armed villains of the Portuguese. The Spanish effort 1475-1480 to take much of the West African trade from Portuguese failed. The Spaniards then headed west, hoping to reach the Spice Islands on the east by circumventing the world. If they reached the Spice Islands by going west, they would circumvent the language of the Papal War. In 1492, Columbus claimed that he had reached the Spice Islands. Spanish hopes rose. When these islands turned out not to be the spice-laden Indies, the Spaniards pushed on. In 1421, Magellan circumvented the world. He entered the spice lands from the western door and claimed the Philippine Islands for the crown of Spain. But about the same time, the Spaniards stole gold and silver in American mainland, or what Columbus had earlier mistaken for the Indies. This luck had turned in a land that they bought barren and profitless. They subsequently abandoned the effort to conquer a Portuguese mastery over the European trade. Instead, the conquistadors marched on the American mainland. Cortez overwhelmed the Mexican Aztecs. Pizarro massacred the Peruvian Incas into submission. The Spanish conquistadors uprooted the societies they conquered, stole the silver, the gold, and gems, and carried off all to Europe. Successful brigandage by luck and the roots of aggression of Spaniards and secure for themselves an empire richer than that of Portugal. Spanish priests set about converting the vanquished Amerindians to Catholic Christianity, while Spanish soldiers put them to work mining silver and gold, planting spices, and raising hides. The Amerindian label was soon deemed unsuitable and was supplemented with labor of Africans imported to share the toil. The empire's commerce was regulated from Seville. Madrid was its capital, and Buenos Aires, Calico, Cuso, Florida, Havana, Lima, Manila, Port Royal, Puerto de Navidad, Quinto, San June, and Veracruz were some of its cities, settlements, and ports. But the monopoly these pioneers held over European procurement of silver, gold, spices, and later of the rest of the world through sanctified by the Papal Bull of 1493 and legalized by Louis the Spaniard, Treaty of Tordesillas 1494, did not long go unchallenged by other nations in Western Europe. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. So, you see what they did. They went from place to place. They took that show around the world, and everywhere they went, they devastated the people. They weren't prepared for that onslaught. And they didn't have any mercy. That's the other thing. They were merciless. They really didn't even want you to convert to Christianity because they really wanted your land and your labor.
And you know what, Brother Braggs, was so important about that? When you really look at it, you're looking at you'll hear this over and over, spices, silver, and gold. Spices, silver, and gold. Because now, this is why that's so important. In order for these civilizations to be as highly technical, to have the establishments of the cities and the ports and have the trade routes all over the world, that made all of those ports extremely wealthy, extremely wealthy. And the technology that they had supersedes what they try to give you the illusion of. The key to stealing the silver and the gold and the spices is, one, you transfer wealth from you to them, because you think about it, there was no pharmaceutical industry back then. Every disease had to have a spice or an herb to cure it. And that's where the mastery of holistic medicine was practiced. But not only that, technology itself. Those civilizations were able to establish great wealth and to have great technological advancements because of silver. The key to that is this, is that you cannot have any form of technological advancement without silver. I mean, you can, but those that have silver will far surpass you in technology because of silver's intrinsical properties. So that not only were they masters of the holistic medicines, they were masters of technology because they had silver and they had gold. And that gave them a technological edge over everyone else. And this is why these cities and these actual trade routes, which are still in existence, as Scotty talked about earlier and Brother Bragg talked about earlier, China itself still maintains the Silk Road lines, and as well as the spice trade line, because the spices was the key to health and prosperity. So when we're talking about these civilizations of the past that have been hidden from us to manifest a lie today, is because the energy has changed. The energy now is all about enslaving and subjugation by conquer, by conquest, manifest destiny. There it was much different. It was about an expansion of collective prudence because they had the means to survive. So this is so important. So Brother Bragg,
you got to remember this too, Dad. Remember this part. Just imagine a nation of people that's basically subdued, prisoners of war, and they don't know it. Check that out. Just think about that. Because people came to your home and they took it from you and they put you on a different log. Now let's get into Queen Khalifa. I just want you to think about that. I know you're going to have a good one for that one. In the colony of the United States of America, there were Africans who came before slavery, before Columbus, and thousands of years before Jesus Christ. In many cases, these blacks and other indigenous nations established thriving civilizations in ancient America. Queen Khalifa and the California blacks were one such ancient nation. Also, Miss Queen Khalifa, they call her the Queen of Diamonds and Gold. Ancient American Empire, XI, Queen of Diamonds and Gold, Khalifa, and the California blacks. The colony of the United States of America, they were Africans who came before slavery. Reigning over the Empire of XI, the ancient kingdom of Ultra, the nation of Atlan, was the great Queen of Gold and Diamonds. Ruler of California blacks, Queen Khalifa, decorated warrior general. Mother was a grand and beautiful world leader in the beloved, wealthy, and powerful land of blacks, a civilization with abundance of natural resources, gold, diamonds, and vast quantities of precious stones and metals, with territory spanning thousands and thousands of miles throughout California, from the coast of San Francisco to Baja, Mexico, as far inland as Colorado, Utah, and all the Pacific Ocean island nations, including Hawaii and Australia, places where most of the original aboriginal inhabitants were aboriginal black and brown people of color. Queen Khalifa was a powerful queen, strategic opponent, who commanded and maintained a fleet of ships while ushering in a time of peace in all surrounding lands. The robust California blacks were master trainers and lovers of exotic animals with their devoted skills. They were able to teach themselves to defend, utilizing a real force of domesticated and trained griffins and eagles, snakes, tigers, and bears, along with other species native to California and Africa. These unusual creatures were trained to protect the land and its people. So loved, respected, and powerful was the queen. She could project her imperial will over the seas of the Mediterranean, a master of communication and commerce, trading gold, tips, spears, gold, diamonds, precious stones, furs, food, plants, rare birds, animals, as well as maintaining cultural and trading contacts with Africa, Australia, and the Pacific Islands. This great lady ruler was successfully defended her empire during wars in the Mediterranean Sea and Anatolia, as well as against the Byzantine Empire and in Southern Europe. Queen Khalifa and the mighty empire of California blacks, the people whose civilization and history has been lost to time and space through a deliberate destructive conspiracy of lies, secrets, and deaths perpetrated by evil invaders of ancient America. To say they came before Columbus is an understatement. They came thousands and thousands of years before. Many historians, including the renowned expert and father of ancient African studies, Dr. Van Sertima, author of best-selling book, They Came Before Columbus, David Imhotep, PhD, The First Americans Were Black, and Siah and Anton Diop, The African Origins of Civilization, Myth or Reality, among many, all concur and prove that the first Africans started arriving in ancient times between 56,000 to 100,000 years before. It is now also an archaeological fact that the true original people of Americans included many nations, and the black Californians was one of them. As descendants of the Olmecs, West Africa, Manding, Egyptians, King of Kush, and the first emperor of China, Shanghai, Shang Dynasty, other ancient civilizations occupying California in distant past include members of black Mojave and Washington Mound villains, as well as the following: ancient indigenous black nations of California, black Olmecs, Washington, Mound Builders, Louisiana, Midwest, Yamasee, Southeast, Iroquois, Cherokee, Blackfoot, Pequot, and Mohegans, Connecticut, Darien Panama, History of California Blacks. The mighty California Blacks were a powerful, military-savvy civilization with shipbuilders, priests, scientists, traders, and empire builders. These elite seafarers traveled all over the globe, trading in gold and spears, precious stones, masters of commerce. This highly sophisticated society practiced as part of their religious ceremonies, astronomy, tracking celestial Sirius star system, sacred science, geometry, and mathematics. They were nautical wizards of longitude, latitude, master builders of complex housing, political systems, and captains of the open seas, as well as arts, music, and enthusiasts. They were also worshippers of the Egyptian god Horus, Osiris, Isis, Wadat, sun god Ra, and the university of the concept of Ma'at, and how ethical behavior was the norm. The goddess Ma'at represents truth, justice, righteousness, and world order, the supreme ethical paradigm that dictated the behavior of California Blacks and civilizations of ancient America. The California Blacks' exiled empire were ruled by a succession of queens, as was the custom in many ancient African nations. This unfamiliar practice observed by the native Spaniards is surely how the myth of Nymph, Amazon queen legend who hated and killed all baby boys and men, came into existence. Their matriarch societies were based on maternal values. Descendants and relationships were determined through the feminine line, a practice that was very common in the West Africa throughout ancient world. The remarkable multicultural, highly spiritual religious civilization thrived for thousands of years and is truly noted in several recent discoveries, including ancient cave art dating back tens of thousands of years. Over 100,000 cave and rock art pictures, symbols, and ancient artifacts can be found at Crystal Lake, California, now a restricted United States Army base, and thousands of newly discovered cave and rock art found in 2014 in the highlands of Mexico. The photos recently discovered cave art show one thing for sure: they were not a hunter-gatherer tribe, but a complex, highly civilized, thriving civilization that prospered way before the arrival of any Europeans, Indians, or Clovis people. Through our high-tech in-house CGI experiment conducted recently on ancient cave art, we were able to back-engineer some of the ancient art. What we discovered was truly amazing. CGI graphic art techniques were used thousands of years ago. Some art appears to be created using computer-generated technology and 21st century animation. What is revealed is intriguing and very surprising, a unique first-hand glimpse of life in ancient America. Some have low pixelation, however, all are beautiful color depicting cave art. Pictures worship sacred science, Egyptian symbols, including the cross, snakes, god, marriage ceremonies, underwater fishing, cave diving, scuba masks, electricity, guns, gold, mining, and other high-tech capabilities. The California Blacks live by a strict moral ethics code, living in harmony with the people, animals, land, sea, earth, sun, and heavenly planets. Their wood-built homes, official dwellings, and structures was arranged in grandeur and complicitly formed holy sites, cliffs, resonant, monumental buildings, sacred caves, and mounds that were entrenched and decorated magnetically in silk, gold, diamonds, and precious stones. Some appear to have illumination, electricity. Queen Khalifa and the California Blacks were all directly or indirectly related to our descendants of the Olmecs of South America, West African Nile Valley, kings of Kush, Emperor Ramses the Great, and the Yellow Emperor Shangdi of China. The black mound builders of the Washtenaw Moors, Quechua Moors, nation's independent civilization, are also descendants of Olmecs, who successfully lived alongside their cousins, California Blacks, in peace while engaging in boat building, seafaring, trade, commerce for thousands of years. Descendants of Ham, this is killing me. I hate this descendants of Ham stuff, because the curse of Ham, that's why I don't like it. All right. The history of the original black people of California is not mentioned in most American history books. The term Indian is used to classify all people found in America when Columbus arrived. Yet Columbus and his men, as well as people like Balboa and Pedro Matar, do mention Ethiopians and Caribbeans, Darien region of Panama, the coast of South America, California, and other areas. According to these invaders, these black indigenous people were the descendants of Ham, a Bible reference. It was specifically those with black skins, kinky hair, that the Spanish and other Europeans were instructed to capture, kill, and or enslave rather than Christianize them. Based on the edict of mid-1400s, A History of the Olmecs, published by the first book library, the black Californians were not American Indians, but indigenous people of African ancestry, as as a mixed culture that closely resembled today's African-American Melanesians from the Pacific Islands. The history of Black California appeared to be conveniently erased, ignored, shrouded in mystery, myth, and ignorance, all in an effort to keep our history obscured by the mentioning the original people of California and America were Black and American Indians whose civilization existed together peacefully thousands of years before Columbus. Yet the Black Californians are not unknown to the Spanish invaders and colonists whose descendants are part of the population of Mexico, California, and the southwestern United States, and who are no different from the settlers and colonials from Spain, England, France, Portugal, and elsewhere. In fact, the Spaniards who mentioned the legend of Queen Khalifa, who ruled a land at the edge of the world where the women were warriors and decked in gold, and was in fact a Black California. Olmec Queen, descendant of great kings of Kush, queens of West Africa, Olmec, Nubia, Egypt, and China, the Californian Black skin of Ultra Atlanta, California, number over 10 million, with the population exceeding 25 million, including Pacific Island nations, Hawaii, and South America. The Spanish explorers along the California coast were among the first to see, inquire about the Black Californians arrival upon the California shores. They saw a number of Blacks with ships. They asked the Indians who they were, and the Indians replied, "These were the Black curly-haired people, more of the land of California, and traded with people across the sea, the Pacific Ocean, by sailing back and forth." Where were these Black Californians going in the Pacific? They were trading with island nations, people in Hawaii, and throughout the South Pacific, where the Black population had always been very large and widespread. In fact, when Magellan arrived in the Philippines, there were large numbers of Negroes who were well-organized and had strong population. Black traders and Black African Corps who had been in America for thousands of years were able to spread in the Mississippi Valley, eastern United States, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Among the groups were the Washington, the Yamasee, the Gure, the California, Chakras of Brazil, Afro Dante of Panama, Chaco of Colombia, Olmec, Mende, Shia of Mexico, West African, Egyptian, Black Chinese, and Guni of South America, and others. Lafayette mentions a number of Black groups in his work, The Primitive Black Nations of America, Friends of Society of Philadelphia, 1833. One thing is for certain, the European American Spaniards never mistook American Indians for Black Americans. They always referred to Blacks, Negro, African types as Moors, Black, Ethiopians, and people of the Queen of Sheba.
All right, y'all, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to touch back on this. It was just so much that was just read that we got to touch on. You're listening to Tando Radio, radio show brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new Black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Man, Brother Braggs, we got to talk about, and if you have any questions or comments about what Brother Braggs was reading, don't hesitate. Give us a call at 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. And then when you get a chance, Brother Braggs, take a break, because we need to really dissect this and talk about it, because it is far more to this.
I want to give them the article that's a site, so if they want to read that whole article, they can go there and read the whole article themselves, you know, because, you know, I'm funny like that. I like to keep articles like that.
Oh, yeah, you got to source it. Go ahead, Brother Ray.
This article came from EURWeb.com, and the name of the article is, go back to the top. The name of the article is, I believe it's Queen Cali. The History of Queen Khalifa and the California Blacks, euroweb.com. You can get that whole article right there. They got pictures, man. You'll love those pictures. I'm a picture guy. I love pictures.
Yeah, it's true. Now, Brother Brad, we got to talk about this. And once again, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, don't hesitate. Give us a call at 866-510-9025. Then hit **. We'll hear you. Just say, excuse me, and we'll pick you up. And definitely would love to hear from you all. Now, You know, one of the things that's so important about that is, remember when Brother Braggs was reading about how some of the indigenous, they weren't even to enslave. They were just told to kill them on sight. There was a reason why that was, because throughout this land, throughout Central America and America, this is a vast land, and the indigenous had been here for a while. There were different sects, and there were different tribes that were set out, and some tribes were more, because some of them actually traveled across the world more. They were, you know, and so every different tribe had their own specialty or their own culture as how they lived. And there were some very warring tribes that were here that would not go for what these colonizers were doing, and they would actually fight them and destroy them. And so they would put up great resistance. And so whenever you hear this story about where so-called black people or melanated people, in what I call the indigenous people, when they tell you that they were brought here in slavery, that's the whole propaganda of destruction of a culture. Because in actuality, there were many tribes here that were fighting and defending that they could not conquer.
Dave, can you restate that in another way? Because as an abolitionist and one who studied that, Africans were brought here enslaved, and right. So were other people. But it wasn't until the 1600s that they made it where it was only African people who could be enslaved. So, again, this is why people, I don't know what to tell people individually. Every black person ain't a descendant of a slave, but at the same time, I feel like, and I'm not talking about anybody on this program, but other programs I've listened to over the years, they try to act like the slave trade was a myth. I mean, there's just too many historical documents, archival documents. I can look up the information on the 8 families just in my county who were the only ones who enslaved Africans. So the records exist. That's not a hoax. The transatlantic slave trade is not a hoax. And some people are the descendants of those people, but some of us are not, because African descended people populated the world, including this continent, and they just have literally whited them out of the history books.
But you got to remember.
And you know what they do? Go ahead, Brother Braggs.
They started kidnapping people that weren't slaves, because people weren't slaves. Now, remember this, what you just said now. People were free. This was a free country. You walking around your own stuff. These people came and just started kidnapping people. Just grabbing it. And they didn't have any compunction, because one thing, they couldn't take care of themselves. They couldn't grow anything. They didn't know the lay of the land. And remember, they kind of demented. They kind of sick. Sick in the head, that is. They got all this disease. And remember that. These not people thinking straight. When you really get the gist of it, they came here and they just started inadvertently grabbing anybody they could. They didn't have women. And they come from a place where they practice all kind of sex. So they didn't care if it was a man or woman that they had sex with. See, that's what they don't write in history. They were doing all manner of things. Because we're talking about barbarians, vandals, Philistines, the Bible. Man, you got to really get the gist of it. So they came. That's why slaves are made. Slaves are not born, they're created. The people didn't acquiesce to be slaves. These people came, criminals came and kidnapped them. And didn't have any compunction about killing them. Whoever got in the way, man, woman, or child, they didn't have a problem with it.
But you know, they did kidnap people from Africa with the help of Africans. Ghana has apologized and has offered reparations. You can get citizenship in land if you want to repatriate, as they call it. It's another African country. But here is the thing, though. From my research, most of those people, the millions that did come across in the Atlantic slave trade, were children. These weren't grown adults,
right.
These were children. These were teenagers. Yeah, average age was like 16.
Valuable. And remember this too. The African kings, they didn't want to enslave their people. But if I came to you with guns tonight, if me and my 20 partners roll up on you right now and say, "Look, we take your family or your neighbor's family, and we got guns," what are you gonna say? Or we kill you right now? Whatever happened, what you gonna say? So they made them offers they couldn't refuse.
And then when you really get into the history, they went from country to country and they gangsted. The thing that killed me when they went to China, China wasn't really ready for it. They got a little bit into China, but China was able to rebound and put them out. China and Russia are the only countries that were able to stop this. Basically, man, I'm gonna say this. This is what I believe. All this stuff is motivated by money, and bankers are behind every last one of these moves. Somebody's getting rich by every one of these things we see all around the world. Now, remember, you got countries that came together. We're talking about Spain, Portugal, England, Rome. These boys conspired. Because you got to remember, the Moors had the gun. Tifa, they had the gun. They probably had that same bop gun, that one-shot gun. But what the Europeans did, when they got fireworks and gunpowder, they went to the side and they created the cannon and they created the long gun. These boys got a one-shot short gun, pop. These boys built a gun that could breach castle walls. That's that cannon. Once they could breach castle walls, you couldn't do the siege no more because they can come get you. So now nobody is safe. So they just went around the world. They took their game around the world and they took whatever they wanted. Because nobody could stop them. They have superior weapons. You throwing rocks and spears, you can't beat those guns. So they could come with small numbers with superior firepower and subdue the whole population. And they did it. They didn't have any compunction about doing it. They have no shame. I find it could be, man, cowardly shit to me.
That's just, you know, it's just like, you know, like that. Now what we're talking about, you know, what usually happens is that they try to put the whole black history into a small window within history and say that that's the whole thing within these books. But yes, like Scotty said, the Atlantic slave trade definitely did happen. And if you look at those ships, you're absolutely right. Those were children, young people that were on those ships.
What Scotty was saying before you go too far, Dave, because I see the same slave trade in the other direction. I see them sending the slaves from America up into Africa and then being redistributed all over the place. And this is where they pull a big fool. If I grab you right here, basically, you were Indian, but once I send you up to Africa, you come back reclassified as African after you went to the slave fort. So because they're stealing so many people, it's no documentation. So Indians is popping up, indigenous people popping up in Africa and coming back as African. Remember this, Washington said itself, don't bring any more of the Ethiopians to America because it's already too many here now. So they didn't want to, and think about this, they were breeding slaves here. George Washington was breeding slaves. They don't mention that either. He was a slave breeder.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, greetings, Brother Bragg.
Please.
Peace, incredible show. You laying it down like always. Just incredible. What you was describing was exactly what we talked about. It was a global pan-African connection between indigenous black people everywhere. And it was just beautiful. What you read was just incredible. And just to touch on the slave trade, I'm waiting for my wife at the train station. The slave trade in Africa was actually perpetuated by mulatto. They weren't full-blooded Africans. Actually, I posted some information on that on BTR because that's something that white people have said for a long time, that Africans stole Africans. And under certain circumstances, which were very few, exactly the situation you described about, you know, brothers rolling up with guns and either take the neighbor or take yours, that did happen. But as far as the melanated people who sold other blacks, they were mulattoes, they were mixed race. And one of the biggest ones, actually the biggest one that was known, was Tippu Tip. But there were a ton of them. And they basically sided with the Arab fathers over their African mothers. And that's how that took place. And also, when you were describing the cultural complex, because Dr. Ben had dug up artifacts in the Nile Valley dated back to 400,000 years ago. And he found that the indigenous blacks, the short black people, what they call the Pygmies or the San people, the Twa, exactly, that's their real name, the San, the Twa, the Hutu. These people created all of the symbols that we hold sacred in the Nile Valley. The Ankh, the Crook, the Flail, all of the king's crowns, all of that stuff dates back over 400,000 years ago. So when you're talking about
Who the Leprechaun?
Absolutely. There's a brilliant book by David Imhotep where he discusses, it's called The First Americans Were African. And he discusses the same thing, that they found the oldest black people were here 60,000 years ago. 60,000 years ago. And you had subsequent waves of black people that came here, and the Olmecs ended up mixing with the black Chinese people that they call the Shang people, the first dynasty in China to create the later groups that became the Aztecs, the Incas, the Maya, all of these people. And Dr. York actually has a book called Sacred Records, which gives his own history, because he talks about and discusses the fact that he's a descendant of the Amasi people and also descendant of people from Sudan. And he had pictures in a book that I have home that shows Central Americans that they were called Aztec, with one of them has a belt, and it's made out of solid stone, and in the middle of the belt is actually an ankh. So the connections are all there. It's all there. What you're talking about tonight is just incredible. Keep doing what you're doing. You always got my support. I'm going to mute myself for now because my wife just came, and when I get home, we'll pick up from there. But one love, and thank you for everything. I can't wait to finish listening to this. Yes, sir. One love.
Peace.
And you know, one of the things I want to rehash is that one of the things that we have to know about our ancestors, the indigenous people, they not only have relations in trade routes and commerce globally, they had it interstellarly. And that's one of the things that they try to hide from us. But when we start to really look at things, and what I mean by interstellar, I mean that they were able to have relationships with other living beings on other planets within the universe itself. And it wasn't where they were coming to actually teach, but there was a communion that they actually had. It wasn't just a one-sided communion. It wasn't just where you were learning from technology far superior than yours from outside of Earth. There was a collaboration that was happening. And that collaboration, just as there were benevolent celestial beings that were engaging, there was also malevolent ones that were able to gravitate with other people here that practiced the Nazism of the cult, because that's what they really are, they're a cult, and they were practicing manifest destiny. So they resonated with them, and they aligned with them, and you still have that stuff going on today. I'm going to tell you, the truth is stranger than fiction, but it is only for us because we believe everything that we've been schooled in, and until we start to look at things, because as Brother Braggs, Roz, Scotty, we were everywhere. And the evidence of that is still here. Look at us now. We're everywhere. If you travel anywhere in the world, you're going to see people of color. You're going to see melanated people. And no, not just people that identify themselves as being melanated or indigenous or so we can understand, black. Just because someone doesn't admit that they black, you still black. Okay? I'm sorry, India, you black. You black. But that shows how even today that cannot be denied. The only thing that can be denied is if we deny ourselves. And that's really, really critical. So
move out, please. They're too close.
Hey, Dave.
That's okay.
I'm gonna throw a curveball right now because I think this is pertinent. Check this out. An expose of the system, of the caste system among Negroes. The policy of the Universal Negro Improvement Association is so clean cut. My personal views are so well known that no one for even one moment could reasonably accuse us of having any other desire than that of working for the United Negro race. The program of the Universal Negro Improvement Association is the drawing together of one universal whole. All the Negro peoples of the world, with prejudice toward none, we desire to have every shade of color, even those with one drop of African blood in our fold,
because we believe that none of us, as we are, is responsible for our birth. In a word, we have no prejudice against ourselves. In race, we believe that every Negro racially is just alike, and therefore we have no distinction to make. Hence, whenever you see the Universal Negro Improvement Association, you will find us giving every member of the race an equal chance and opportunity to make good. Unfortunately, there is a disposition on the part of certain elements of our people in America, the West Indies and Africa, to hold themselves up as the better class or privileged group of the caste system. This subject is such a delicate one that no one is honest enough to broach it. Yet the evil of it is working great harm to our racial solidarity. And I personally feel it is my duty to my right now to bring it to the attention of all concerned, the Universal Negro Improvement Association that found it on truth, and therefore anything that would menace or retard the race must be gotten out of the way. Hence, our stand is in this direction. During the early days of slavery, our people will rest from the bosom of our native land, Africa. Now, this is Marcus Garvey. I should have said that. I'm sorry. And brought into this clime. For centuries against their will, our mothers were subjugated to the most cruel and unfair treatment, the result of which had created amongst us a diversity of colors and types, to the end that we had become the most mixed race in the world. The abuse of our race was up to 85 years ago in the West Indies and 57 years ago in America beyond our control, because we were then but chattel slaves of our masters. But since emancipation, we have had full control of our own moral social life and cannot therefore complain about anyone other than ourselves for any social or moral wrongs inflicted upon us. The Universal Negro Improvement Association realizes that this is now our duty to socially and morally steady ourselves, hence our desire to bring about a united race with one moral code and principle. The types in our race should not be blamable to our generation, but to abuse and advantage taken of us in the past. But that should not be reasons for us to further open ourselves to continuation of this abuse and thereby wreck our racial pride and self-respect. The Universal Negro Improvement Association believes that time has come for us to halt and thus steady ourselves on the basis of race and not be allowed to drift along in the world as outcasts or lepers of society, to be laughed at by every other race beneath the social breath. Near white, some of us in America, the West Indies and Africa, believe that the nearer we approach the white man in color, the greater our social standing and privilege, and that we should build up an aristocracy. I'm not pronouncing that. Aristocracy. Based upon caste of color and not achievement in race. It is well known, although no one is honest enough to admit it, that we have been for the past 30 years at least, but more so now than ever, grading ourselves for social honor and distinction on the basis of color. That average success of the race has been regulated by color and not ability, and meant that we have been trying to get away from the pride of race into an atmosphere of color worship, to the damn extent that the whole world has made us its laughingstock. There is no doubt that a race that doesn't respect itself or fits the respect of others, and we are in the moral social position now of losing the respect of the whole world. There is a subtle and underhanded propaganda fostered by a few men of color in America, the West Indies, and Africa, destroying the self-respect and pride of the Negro race by building up what commonly known to us as a blue vein aristocracy, and to foster the same as social and moral standards of the race. The success of this effort is very much marked in the West Indies and coming into immediate recognition in South Africa. It is now gaining much headway in America under the skillful leadership of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and their solid but scattered agents. The observant members of our race must have noticed when in the recent years a great hostility between the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and must have wondered why Du Bois writes so bitterly about Garvey and vice versa. Well, the reason is plainly to be seen after the following explanation. Groups that hate Negro. Du Bois represented a group that hates the Negro blood in its veins and has been working subtly to build up a caste aristocracy. I can't pronounce that. Hey, Dave, where you at, man? Aristocracy. Please pronounce it. It's killing me, man.
Aristocrats. Aristocratic.
Okay, that's the word. They were associated by the race of the two groups. One, the superior because of color caste. The other, the inferior. Hence, the pretentious work of the National Association for the Advancement of Color Persons.
the program of deception was well arranged and underway for success when Garvey arrived in America. And he, after understudying the awful doctor and the group he represented, fired a bomb into the can by organizing a Universal Negro Improvement Association to cut off the wicked attempt at race deception and distinction, and in truth to build up a race united in spite and the ideal, with the honest desire of adjusting itself to its own moral, social pride and national respect. When Garvey arrived in America and visited the Office of National Social Aid for the Advancement of Colored People to interview Du Bois, who is regarded as the leader of the Negro people and who had recently visited the West Indies, he was dumbfounded on approach to office to find that but for Mr. Deal, Du Bois himself and the office boy, he could not tell whether he was in a white office or the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The whole staff was either white or very near white, and thus Garvey got his first shot of the advancement hypocrisy. There was no representation of the race that anyone could recognize. The advancement meant that to you, you had to be as near white as possible. Otherwise, there was no place for you as a stenographer, clerk, or attendant in the office of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. After a short talk with Du Bois, Garvey became so disgusted with the man and his principles that he thought he never contemplated entered his mind that a remaining in America to teach Du Bois and his group what real race pride meant. Garvey, NAACP office. When Garvey left the office of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People to travel through and study the social life of Negro America, he found that the policy of the association was well observed in business, professional life, as well as the drawing room, etc., all over the country, in restaurants, drugstores, and offices all over the nation. While people were engaged in business, and it was discovered that these employees were very lightest members of the race, as waitresses, clerks, and stenographers. Garvey asked, what's the matter? Why were not black, brown-skinned, and mulatto girls employed? And he was told, for the good of the trade, that to have trade, it was necessary to incumbent to have light faces, as near white as possible. But the shot did not stop there. New York, Boston, Washington, Detroit, Garvey further discovered the activities of the Blue Vein Society and the Colonial Club. The West Indian Lights formed the Colonial Club, and the American Lights, the Blue Vein Society. The Colonial Club would give annual balls besides regular monthly soirees, and no one less than a quadroon would be admitted. And gentlemen below the complexion were only admitted if they were lawyers, doctors, or very successful businessmen with plenty of cash who were known to uphold the caste aristocracy. Ooh, can I say that, man? At St. Joseph's Church, New York, where the very Rev. Dr. Daniels held sway and dominion, the society had things so arranged that even though this man was a brown-skinned clergyman and his rector a very near white gentleman, he had to be blue-van, and the others would have to look in when they by fawning before harming themselves and by giving lavishly to the church admitted the superiority of caste. By the way, Dr. Daniels is also an executive officer or director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in Washington. One of the two of the churches did the same thing, but in Detroit, the very Rev. Bob Bagnall, now director of branches of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, held sway. In his church, no dark person could have a seat in the front and to test the truthfulness of its being told. Garvey and Carmita one Sunday night attempted to occupy one of the empty seats not very near the front, and the effort nearly spoiled the whole service. A brother Bob, who was then ascending the pulpit, nearly lost his balance to see such a face so near the Holy of Holies. Brother Bob was also an officer of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. When Garvey's return to New York, he made incognito a similar test at St. Philip's Church one Sunday, and the Reverend Daniels was nearly ready to fight. Now, what does all this mean? It is to relate the hidden program and motive of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and to warn Negro America of not being deceived by a group of men who have more love for the Negro blood in their veins as the devil has for holy water. Scheme to destroy the race, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, in a scheme to destroy the Negro race, and the leaders of it hate Marcus Garvey because he had discovered them at their game, and because the Universal Negro Improvement Association, without prejudice of color or caste, is making headway and bringing all people together for their common good. They hurt Garvey because the Universal Negro Improvement Association and the Black Star Line employ every shade of color and race according to ability and merit. Put the NAACP to shame for employing only the lightest of the race. They hate Garvey because he forced them to fill Chitterley's place with a Negro. They hate Garvey because he had to employ black pickings to cover up the scheme after Garvey had discovered it. Pickaninnies. Man, I only read that because, man, I heard some people, and I read some articles, people were writing saying that Garvey was sold out to the NAACP, and I just wanted to show you that Garvey never sold out to the NAACP. As a matter of fact, those powerful people that Garvey offended ended up getting Garvey kicked out of the state. He lost all funds, they disgraced him, which is what they do to you when you get too powerful in this country. Now, I'm going to jump back to another thing. Okay, here you go. Now, this is from the same book. This is from Let Nobody Turn Us Around. This is for educational purpose only, Voices of Resistance, Reform and Renewal, the America Anthology, Manning, Marble, Leaf, Mullings, Editors. And what this is, Roger B. Taney opinion on Dred Scott. The question is simply this: can a Negro whose ancestors were imported into this country and sold as slaves become a member of the political community formed and brought into existence by the Constitution of the United States? And as such, entitled to all the rights, privileges, and immunity guaranteed by the instrument to the citizen, one of which rights is the privilege of suing in a court of the United States in cases specified in the Constitution. It would be observed that plea applies to the class of person only whose ancestors were Negroes or African race and imported into this country and sold and held as slaves. The only matter and issue before the court, therefore, is whether the descendants of such slaves, when they shall be emancipated, or who are born of parents who have become free before their birth, are citizens of a state in the sense in which the word citizen used in the Constitution of the United States, the word people of the United States, and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, from the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representation, they are what we familiarly call the sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of the sovereignty. The question before us is whether the class of persons described in a plea in abatement compose a portion of this people and are constituent members of the sovereignty. We think they are not, and that they are not included and were not intended to be included under the word citizen in the Constitution, and can therefore claim none of the rights, privileges, which the instrument provides for and secures the citizens of the United States. On the contrary, they were at the time considered as a subordinate and inferior class of beings who have been subjugated by the predominant race, and whether emancipated or not, yet remain subject to their authority, and had no rights or privileges but such as those who held the power and the government might choose to grant them. It is very clear, therefore, that no one state can, by any act or law of its own, passed since the adoption of the Constitution, introduce a new member into the political community created by the Constitution of the United States. It cannot make him a member of this community by making him a member of its own. And for the same reason, it cannot introduce any person or description of persons who are not intended to be embraced in its new political family, which the Constitution brought into existence but were intended to be excluded from it. In the opinion of the court, the legislatures and histories of the times and the language used in the Declaration of Independence show that neither the class of persons who had been imported as slaves nor their descendants, whether they had become free or not, were then acknowledged as part of the people nor intended to be included in the general words used in the memorable instrument. It is difficult to this day to realize the state of public opinion in relation to that unfortunate race, which prevailed in the civilized and enlightened portions of the world at the time the Declaration of Independence and when constitutive amendments in the United States was framed and adopted. They had far more than a century before been regarded as beings of inferior order and altogether unfit to associate with the white race, either in social or political relations, and so far inferior that they had no rights which white men was bound to respect, and that the Negro body might justify and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his benefit. He was bought and sold and treated as ordinary article of merchandise and traffic whenever a profit could be made by it. This opinion was at the time fixed and universal in the civilized portion of the white race. It was regarded as an axiom in morals as well. A Negro of African race was regarded as an article of property and held and bought and sold as such in every one of the 13 colonies which united in the Declaration of Independence and afterward formed the Constitution of the United States. The slaves were more or less numerous in the different colonies, as slave labor was found more or less profitable, but no one seems to have doubted the correctness of prevailing opinion of the time. The language of the Declaration of Independence is equally conclusive. It begins by declaring that
when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station in which the laws of nature and nature's gods entitle them a decent respect for the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impede them to the separation. I'm going to stop right there. I need a drink of water.
Yeah, you do, Brother Bragg. You know, man, it was so much that was read there. Let's if you have any questions or comments that you want to make, definitely give us a call. 866-510-9025.
Could you hear that, Dave?
Yeah, we'll you hear it, definitely. Yeah, we definitely got that. Especially when you said, I need some water. All right, listen, Brother Bragg, we got to get ready to go to a commercial break. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black. Be right back. And we'll come back for the last 30 minutes of the show.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, don't hesitate. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Then hit star, we'll see you in queue. Brother Braggs was just reading a different historical things that we should, be very familiar of and to start to engage in our own history, so that we will be able to identify our true contributions to this, not only this planet, but this whole solar system as well, because we definitely have the bounds and the means and have had the actual opportunity to do far greater things and have done greater things in the past, and we don't have to be subjugated to these lies and the propaganda of today's modern schooling. And because that is what they want to do, because that would uphold the system that they profit from. Ways and means, your way of life provides for their means of life. So,
hey, Brother Dave, I have a comment right quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah, somehow I was just thinking about Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. said, for those who don't know who that is, he wrote a compensatory code book for countering racism. It's like a word guidebook. He also has a radio program. You could catch it on YouTube. Just Google Neely Fuller Jr. You'll find the information. But he said something about history, studying history, that I thought made a lot of sense. I study history because it's always been my favorite subject. I just like to read, and what more interesting than reading about, all the drama of the past, because really it's like reading a drama novel. You know what I'm saying? So, but
right, Scotty, right.
Yeah, but not only will it give people with low self-esteem, because the system has programmed them with low self-esteem to make them think they were nothing but enslaved Africans or this or that, nothing but a conquered people, when this place wouldn't exist without them. You know, and I'm talking about this country in its current form known as USA Inc. But Mr. Fuller said something, and it made me think. He said, you know what? People shouldn't study history to find out how great they once were. He said people should study history to find out where they effed up. How did these people get in control like they in control? Where in your history did you mess up and let them get this advantage and maintain this advantage? And that just made a lot of sense to me. Again, you know, I studied history because it was interesting reading to me, and I've just always done it all my life. And it did give me a sense of pride of knowing these things, that these people been lying about the history of black people globally and all of this. But then also, like he said, though, you know, where did we go wrong? Where did we mess up? What can we draw from those lessons of the past? So study history to find out where we effed up as a people, so that we can correct those mistakes. What do y'all think about what he said?
Man, Scotty, well, you know me. Yes, that's the reason why you do it. Because I'm going to tell you, you can never learn, you can never become a champion until you first learn the art of losing. And we have to. And that is so critical, because from that standpoint, why did things change? What changed everything? And it's, and I firmly believe is that some of the digression that we had is that we had became and we had allowed that influence, and we had bought into the lies that they were pushing. And not only that, you know, when you start to look at, not all civilizations and societies and not all tribes were malevolent tribes. Some foul people have always been around. And then what happens is that you have to find out, okay, who were they, and because who am I? And I think it's so critical, because if you don't do that, then you will continue to fall into the trap of you becoming what you have to endure. So I think it's so important. Where did it go wrong, and why did it go wrong? Because it wasn't just at one event. It was accumulation of events. It was a change. It was a changing of a paradigm. It was a changing of energy. It was a changing of direction. It was a changing of free will. What happened is, by, in so many ways, by the will of the people, and we talk about this before, the will of the system is only able to survive because those that give energy to maintain it is stronger than ours that want to defeat it. That's the real reason. So I think it's critical. I don't want to take up everything, but I think that that is definitely one part of it all that we need to look at. And then not only that, where, why, but what was it in us that changed? And are we still that of the past, or have we evolved back to what our true capabilities are? That's really a good question. So I'm going to let Brother Braggs and anyone else that want to chime in on that sound off.
Hey, Dave, what it was, you was God's people. You was too busy being in tune to the earth, and you wasn't watching these barbarians that came to your shores. You didn't have... Why would you? You live in a peaceful, serene environment. You got everything you need. You pick fruit off the trees. You walk around with your body. You got the finest body in the sunlight. You got everything you need. You don't have a reason to steal anything from anybody. You don't have to jump in your boat. When you go across the world, you're going to do fair trade. You're not going to steal people's things. It's a whole different mentality. You got, and that's the other thing. You got to keep the mentality. These people think they have a right to come out the caves and steal everything in their path. And they did. Once they got the superior firepower, they didn't have no compunction about using it. So God's people, living by Mahat couldn't deal with the barbarian, because the barbarian didn't care about that system, that principle. He didn't care that you were civilized. He didn't care that you treated him kind, that you gave him bread, that you extended your hand to him. He chopped your hand off. And then he tied your other hand behind your back and told you if you didn't do what he needed you to do, he was taking you out. Matter of fact, a lot of people that they subdued, they really didn't want, they didn't even want to make them be Christians. They just wanted the land, so they just killed them and subdued them. And the other thing about that reverse slavery, remember this, Columbus, when he was coming back to Isabella and Ferdinand, he went a couple of times. He took Indian slaves right into the courts of Spain. So the reverse slavery, just think about it. It's there. All of it's right there. Never believe what they told us. You got to find your own route yourself, because they're not going to tell you the truth about what they have done. Why would they? If you came to America and you killed God's people who are represented in the Bible, how are you going to tell the world you came to kill God's people? And when you look at Columbus and start going over all the places that he went, he was on a holy crusade looking for, this is the new world, the land of milk and honey. And all those reasons, when you see those Italian conquistadors, murder, rapists, killers, they're all on some kind of quest. Sparked on by the Roman Catholic Church, sent all those boys to do what they do. Subdue all nappy-head people, take their lands, and murder. And that's what they did. And they're still going on today. That's why I read history. Everything that I read today is still pertinent today in 2017. We're still fighting the same abolitionist battles that they was fighting back in those days.
Brother Braggs.
But most people don't get it.
Brother Braggs, this is what I learned from my study of history and how we got into this position, is that certain individuals within our community allowed themselves to be corrupted by these people. And then that corruption, that mind spread, just that integration mindset came into being. And we helped them do everything that they've done. Let's be honest about that. If we study in history to see where we effed up, then if they had a crystal ball, they should have just murdered them on the shores of whatever shore they showed up on, like when they pushed up in here in North Carolina, how they just got slaughtered and whatnot. Right, well, but even
they would have died off.
Yeah, even when the American Revolution, they had their little dispute with the King of England, the American the Continental Army was losing. Until George Washington lifted the racist ban, then free black people and enslaved Africans could join. Was the last three battles, they were the difference in deciding who won. Black people did, and we were on both sides. Then you look at the Civil War, and I'm talking about recent history.
British Marines burned down Washington D.C. That's who brought it down. The people that they call free, that they were able to pull over, burned down Washington D.C. Those were the black people.
But see, even those black people was fighting for white people. They're fighting for the king. They were under the king's banner. So on all sides, we've been helping them conquer the freaking world. And I came to that realization.
They turned us on ourselves everywhere. Everywhere they went, they turned us against each other. That's how they did it. They had to have people to help them, and they had the people that was there. They always were able to find somebody who would acquiesce and help them.
But we doing it now. We think it's nothing to send our daughters off or our sons for them to join the military and stuff. And when I hear people speak that was in the military speaking with pride, I'd be like, you just a confused Negro. You was like me back when I was in the military until I read Malcolm X's book, and then I saw myself as being a tool of racism, white supremacy. So you know, I'm not ashamed of my service, but I am. I'm not proud of it either. It is what it is. It happened the way it happened. It happened for a reason. It put me on a certain path. But now I understand. So that's, again, how we help. We help them conquer everything, man. When we stop helping them and collaborating with them, like, for example, what do y'all think will happen if black people and non-white people, people classified as non-white, just all of a sudden said we're boycotting joining the U.S. military? What do you think will happen?
I don't know how they gonna fight wars with our young bodies, man. Gotta have bodies.
They wouldn't be able to do what they doing, and if they just recruit more.
Again, Scotty.
Say that again, Braggs.
I had a draft when I came up. Everybody had to register by 18. When you turn 18, you went down.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the draft. I'm talking about military. You like my father? You was forced. You were forced to go. You know what I'm saying? But I'm talking about in terms of the last 40 years since they've had an all volunteer force.
Well, one thing for certain.
Go ahead, Brother Bragg.
I'm going to say one thing for certain. You know that all wars are bankers' wars. You made that quite clear, Dave. When I look at what you say, it's true. Every war, a bank, a foreign bank, remember they got munitions and all this stuff. Foreign banks make a killing off of war.
Yeah, it is. You know, just to answer Scotty's question, and I think it's a very pointed question, but if that was to happen, you know and I know that they would instigate and they would cause the lights to go out immediately, because this is one of the catalysts in order to maintain the direction. And you know, Scotty's absolutely right. It was our own, some of our own doings and our involvement where we compromised ourselves for the falsehood of the magic that they was, whatever magic that they were propagating was a lie. And you know, there are different well-known groups such as the Moors and that had great influence. And I know, you know, Brother Braggs and I have talked about this. What was it that they did? Because there was, and I'm not talking about all of the Moors. There were just, you know, one thing that the society likes to do is they like to put everyone in one big pot and say it's everyone. Why? Because that's the measure of propaganda control. Then you can control and get people to look at individuals from a standpoint of everyone there is that person or just like that, and that's done throughout, and that's a deceptive part of combat. You know,
I was just about to say that we got a couple of callers on the board.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob. Go ahead.
I just wanted to chime in a very important conversation, and I wanted to throw a question out there. First a comment and then a question, saying like, what have they done? Like, where was the mistakes made? And it seems like right now the oppressor has the attention of our greatest resource, which is the black female. Okay. And it seems that when the woman is the first one that teaches the child, you know, when the woman is the first one that teaches the child, if the woman is influenced by the oppressor, it's kind of seeming like that's where we at today. So my question is this, in this quote unquote war, black people on the black side of the chessboard, should we be targeting white females as a part of this war that's taking place? And that's all I have. Thank you.
Getting targeted for what?
Yeah, I don't. Be more clear, Rob, on your question. Target them in what way?
Okay. Let me restate the question. Should black males be looking to engage in relationships and or sexual contact with white females to influence the white females?
You talking about genetic annihilation? That's what you're talking about.
Why? We got the queens. Why would we need a white female? We got the mothers of all women. Touch yourself and touch your mother. And I'm not saying that being nasty. Touch yourself. If you touch yourself, you touch your mother. Everybody realize, touch yourself and you touch your mother. You were born from your spine from your father, but you wear your mother's body. Why would you need a white female?
That's not the question that I asked.
I understand your question, Rob.
Let me make my statement. I didn't ask if the black male needed the white female.
Right.
The specific question that I asked in this war, and we on the black side of the chessboard, when the woman influences the child firsthand, right, the woman teaches the child, should black males be targeting white females? Because in my observation, the white male has the black female at this point in time, and I'll mute my line.
I understand this question, and actually, Rob, I was just talking to somebody today about that earlier. But I tell you what, if you're free Saturday night, because we're running out of time, and I think Ross has something to add, and we just had somebody from 850. We don't have another program coming on right at 8 o'clock. So, Dave, if you need to take a couple of more minutes to take all these calls. But
yeah, let's take these. Rob,
very interesting question. I'd like to delve more into it tomorrow night.
Let's go to Scotty. Pick someone off the board because I can't see the board. Go ahead, Scotty. Pick someone off the board.
Ross, did you have another comment?
Yes, I did. Thank you so much. Profound conversation. I think, I want to be involved in that conversation tomorrow, too. I'd say, like you said, Scotty, I agree with you. I've heard you say this before, that black males having sexual contact with white females would help facilitate genetic annihilation, which is correct. There's also a flip side to that, too, because if there's enough mixing of white genes with black genes, they'll dilute the black gene. It won't completely be gone, but it'll be regressed. The thing about that with white females is that the white female is the origin of white supremacy. They're the ones who actually taught white men and gave them the whole idea of genetic annihilation. They're literally the nucleus of how this thing functions. They have played the white man up so that the black males and females, for that matter, look at him as the aggressor and him as the problem, but she is the one pulling the strings behind the scenes that no one is paying attention to.
Exactly my point.
And the thing is that because she understands genetic annihilation, her having a child by a black male, I've heard enough programs on the cows where we have these children with white female parents and they're no less racist than their fathers and they abuse and mistreat children no different than the white male would. So maybe over time it might work, but I don't know. I can't really speak to that in regards to that. But maybe over time it might work. There was something else I wanted to chime in because you guys were talking about.
Hey, Ross, before you do, let me just let the caller 850 know we coming to them next. Go ahead, Ross. No. Let Ross finish his comment, and then 850 will come to you. I just wanted to let you know I see you on the board, sir. Ross, did you want to wrap it up?
Yes. I was going to say, in reference to what Brother Bragg said, and you, Brother Scotty, in regards to black people being complicit, yes, we spent the majority of our time focusing on spiritual perfection and elevation, which is how we did the advanced things that we did back then, which gave the enemy time to perfect warfare because that was their culture. So we were not prepared for when they came. And when black people really started participating in self-subjugation was when the traditional priesthood in different parts of the continent became convinced that the quote-unquote magic that white people carried, which were the guns and the weapons they had, was more powerful than their spiritual power that they had. Once they believed that, then they literally started to give in and say, okay, well, you know, this is a new paradigm, this is a new system, you know, I'm going to have to make my way and fit into this particular situation because these people have power I don't have. And once that happened, that facilitated destruction on a massive scale, and we're still dealing with that now. Because even Brother Scotty, when you were talking about your own history in the military, and when you came to that realization that you were being used by white people to propagate, you know, global white supremacy, essentially, all of the black people and non-white people who joined the military, we all come in with this understanding that this is the paradigm we're in. So we're convinced subconsciously that this is the way things are supposed to be, this is the way it's going to be, because white people are in control, and they're like Brother Bragg said, they have no compunction about wiping out non-white people. So if we can reverse that psychological trend, we can definitely make headway. And for Brother Rob, you're right, if we can help facilitate a different paradigm with the way we interact and function with black females, they will be the facilitators of us being able to transform where we move as a collective group. Thank you. And I'll mute my line and give the other person a chance to speak. Thank you.
Yes, peace. This is Sincere in the Choir. What's up, Scotty? What's up?
Hey, Sincere. I got the new music, man. I haven't had a chance to reply to you yet, but I will this weekend. But definitely the tracks I listen to, I love, man.
Yeah, no rush. I was here going to and fro and listening in on the program is amazing. But to be quick,
Wait. This is my first time getting to talk to this brother. Man, thank you so much for you being you, man. Go ahead, do your thing, and get my number from Scotty.
Appreciate it. Okay, will do. And just to touch on two things, I think one of the questions was, where did we go wrong? I mean, that could be a whole show, but I think one of the principal things is that we lost our spiritual way. You know, we took on other gods, even though the spiritual systems of Christianity, yep, and Islam, they involve a lot of our original systems. But I think that was number one. That was one of the number one problems. We lost our spiritual system. And the other thing I think that impacted us the most is we lost our nationality. We lost our nations. You know, we lost our tribes. And so I think when you're stripped of your identity and you put into something else, no matter what you do now from that point, you still have an element of the oppressor that you're still going through. So as the last caller said, if we you know black males went out and just start propagating with white females, what good would it be if we don't have a nation, if we don't have a ideology, if we don't have a culture to enforce on those children? And that program didn't really work. That was the fall of Egypt. Egypt fell because of the mulatto. So I really think that one thing I love about the Moors and the Moors ideal is that the movement is to try to raise a nation, an ideal of nation, not necessarily a club. You know, that's what we got now. We just got a bunch of clubs. But an ideal, not something you actually join, but an actual culture that ties us back. And there's no one thing, but that's kind of my perspective. I just want to chime in on that point there. And I enjoy the show. Thank you.
Hey, Dave, I just want to say one more thing. You were saying the Moors. Check this out. This is the last thing I got to say. The World's Great Men of Color, Volume 2. Check this out. When the Moors were expelled from Spain, they returned to Morocco, where the Emperor El Mansur arranged with them to invade Equatorial Africa. The old empire of Songhai, this invasion broke up the structure of the last great empire in Western Africa, and the chaos that followed set up Africa for the future European slave trade. The slave trade prospered, and Africans continued to be poured into the New World. Figures on the subject vary, but it has been established that during the years of the African slave trade, Africa lost 60 to 100 million people. This was the greatest single crime ever committed against a people in the world history. It also set the most tragic act of protracted genocide. The first Africans who came to the New World were not in bondage, contrary to popular belief. Africans participated in some of the early expeditions, mainly with Spanish explorers. The best known of the African explorers was Estevano, sometimes known as Little Stephen. That's far as I go with that today. I just wanted, because you asked where did the Moors go, but Dr. Henry Clark said one day in one of his lectures, he said, man, go to World's Great Men of Color, page 305, and you'll see how the Moors helped destroy the last great African empire. Now, I followed the Moors for 20-some years before I ever heard Dr. Clark say that, and it blew me away when I went to the book and it was in there like that. And this is from World's Great Men of Color, J.A. Rogers, Volume 2, page 305, and you can find what I just read to you.
Brother Dave, you there?
Okay.
Yeah, we gotta wrap it up.
Okay, we're gonna wrap it up. Well, I'm gonna just say, man, great show, and I would just say, you know, because we're pushing up against time, I'm gonna definitely try to jump in on Saturday. And to Rob's question, it's a great question. I never think that if you have someone that is about manifest destiny, about the cultist activities of subjugation and enslavement, by going into contract or going into relationship with them, that power of evil will only overtake you. Why? Now, I'm not saying that every person that is non-black or is white is a is a white supremacist or things that would be the system teaching you to speak that way, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. But why would we use that as a tactic when that tactic has already been used against us and it's already been done, and it actually dilutes our overall ability to reestablish who we truly, truly are. So that's just my opinion. Great, great show. Great, great questions. Great comments. All of you, much love, much respect. It's never goodbye. As always, I'll see you later. Peace.